Quality proteins aren't just for special occasions. With Omaha Steaks, you get unbeatable flavor and value delivered right to your door. They have an unmatched selection of perfectly portioned proteins, including USDA certified tender, steaks, burgers, chicken, pork, seafood, and more. All flash frozen at their moment of peak quality. Then quickly delivered to your door in a dependable cooler. So a great dinner is just minutes away. From Taco Tuesday to a weekend feast. Omaha Steaks practically invented meat delivery, and they've been perfecting the art of premium proteins for over 100 years. With their 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can order with complete confidence. Taste the Omaha Steaks difference, a better, more convenient way to buy proteins. Start getting flavorful proteins delivered today. Visit omahasteaks.com and get $35 off with promo code AUDIO at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code AUDIO. Terms apply. See site for details.
Football on off the ball.
I was at Wembley in 2013, I think it was, when Wigan beat Manchester City, but ultimately got relegated from the Premier League. Where would Wigan fans rather be now? Would they rather be in the Premier League, or would they rather be as an FA Cup winner?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
He's got a goal! Oh,
the Saints are marching on with three wins on the trot after a shaky start in the SSE Electricity Premier Division.
The ball comes in and they score from the free kick! Would you believe it?
Heading down the rocky road to Dublin to face St Pat's this Friday night are Doherty United.
Conor Keighley rises once again!
Doherty's men are in the doghouse after two defeats in their last two matches. Will the informed James Brown help the Saints get payback after two home draws against the Louthmen last year?
Brilliant performance for St Pat's tonight.
Vinnie Perth will be with Phil Egan at Richmond Park. It's the League of Ireland. It's live and exclusive on Off the Ball from 7 on Friday night.
That was a superb bit of play.
League of Ireland on Off the Ball.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Matthew Brennan is in the producer's chair today. How are you, Matthew?
Yeah, I'm good.
You've been away for a couple of days. Do anything fun?
No, very little. Just a little bit of relaxation. I'm rejuvenated now. I'm back in the seat. I say I'm back in the seat. It's the first time I've been in the seat in this role. So it's the first time for both of us, Mick.
There you go. It's usually your day off, so we dragged you in to do this
exactly.
For the first time. But
Friday.
That all taking a random break from Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is something I should try sometime. As is traditional on a Friday at this stage, Keith Tracy, how are you?
I'm great, Mick. How are you?
I'm fantastic, yeah. Tired, not used to this,
aren't we
this hour of the morning, but we'll be okay, don't worry. Off the Ball Breakfast with Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction, maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. Keith, are you enjoying European football week? Kind of feels like it's been a few weeks since we've had it. We're in knockout stages. First leg's never as fun, but we've had I feel like you do kind of reconnect a little bit with the realisation that maybe English football isn't the only thing going.
Yeah.
When suddenly they struggle.
It was a little bit of a surprise, wasn't it? I still, as an Arsenal fan, I'm still quite comfortable thinking that we should get past Bayer Leverkusen in the second leg. I know it's 1-1, but I would still back Arsenal to go through. I would still back Liverpool to go through, but the Chelsea one, I done the Chelsea game on Wednesday for Virgin. It was a brilliant game. I enjoyed every minute of it, but I have to say, I'd love to know what the Chelsea fans are thinking of Liam Rossignol at the minute, because in the 85th minute of that game, it's 3-2, and Luis Enrique brings on Kvaratskhelia, and you're thinking, PSG are going for it here. They want to win this game. Being in Paris, they want to get some sort of advantage going to London. And Liam Rossignol played into the hands of PSG. He went to try and win the game or go level, and I thought that was extremely silly. I thought it was foolish, naive, short-sighted. And I know people talk about Arsenal's game management probably going to the extreme with the time wasting and how long it is and set pieces and all that. A little bit of game management there from Chelsea, and they're a goal behind going into London, and you're thinking that's a cracking game next week. I can't wait for that. Now the tie is dead. Because for me, PSG are going to score in London, which means Chelsea are right up against it. And yeah, I just don't understand what Liam Rossini is thinking. He thinks he can go toe-to-toe with PSG away from home, yet when they play Arsenal in the EFL Cup in the second leg of the semi-final, they stink the house out for 70 minutes in the Emirates.
Yeah.
What's Chelsea's best way of going about it here? It's sort of like...
Does he have some leeway to go and try and figure that out over the course of this season when he comes in mid-season and... You know, see, the problem is with Chelsea is like, what's your team even going to be next year? Are you going to completely reinvent the wheel again?
Yeah, but that's the massive, massive problem. I just think there's a ceiling to what Chelsea can do because of the amount of players and because of the turnover and everything else. And by the way, Sanchez was on the bench for Chelsea and Jorgensen gave away a goal, and I'm not blaming him. He gives away a goal, but 5 minutes before they get punished for playing a sloppy ball on the edge of the 18-yard box, Nuno Mendes gets cut offside. He plays one into the middle and I think it's Casado gets caught on his heels. They nick the ball and it goes up to Nuno Mendes. He gets cut offside and he hit the back of the net. Didn't learn from it. Didn't learn from it at all. Kept doing it. And you think, I was always told the last 5 minutes of a game, the last 5 minutes of the first half, don't make any mistakes because that's the red zone. The game, Chelsea played the game in the fourth minute, the second minute, the fifth minute, the 20th minute. It doesn't matter the feel, it doesn't matter the press, it doesn't matter what the narrative is within the game. They play the same way. And Chelsea aren't good enough to do that, especially away to PSG, the holders of it. And I know they've been underwhelming at times, but there's got to be an awful lot of respect when you go away to PSG. And I felt Chelsea lacked that. 3-2 in the 85th minute is not a bad result.
No, it's a really good result.
5-2 so it ended up.
So it's you don't think it's as much of a lack of nous in playing it as a first leg as the first half, rather than that's just the philosophy they decided to just be go, go, go regardless.
Yeah, just go, go, go. 3-2. Yeah. Like, surely Liam Rossini's turning around to the lads on the bench and thinking, you know what, we're getting beat here, but this is not a bad one. We're still in the toy. We can still go. Get a little bit greedy. And look, Chelsea fans might say, I want my manager on the front foot. I want them doing them things. But the first goal that PSG score, I think it's Chalobah jumps in on the halfway line and somebody else jumps in and Ousmane Dembele's in on the halfway line. He's running in behind on the halfway line. You're thinking, how are you getting counter-attacked away from home to PSG?
It's incredibly high to be caught.
Extremely high. And I know Damien Delaney on Virgin doing the punditry said, he wants his team on the front foot. But you can't keep diving into tackles on the halfway line. And if you do dive in, you've got to make sure the player doesn't go past you.
Yeah.
It's just seemed a little bit naive and a little bit silly. But as you say, Mick, I think it's too early to say Liam Rossini, you know, a little bit naive. He's still learning the game. But 3-2 to 5-2. You're in the game to out of the game in a 10-minute period.
Yeah, it's not great really, is it? Like, and it looks like they're out of the Champions League now, so it's all about can they get into that, you know, three places for four teams in the Champions League race. And I don't know, like Rossini, I think Matt, he's got to, like you mentioned Jorgensen after the match before we came on air, they've got this centre circle huddle thing that's kind of annoying everybody. They're getting, Neto is going to get a suspension now for the ball boy thing. They're getting lads sent off constantly. It just, like, we're not at Spurs levels, but it just feels like they're a bit of a mess. Like,
they're very weird. Just on the goalkeeper thing as well, like, they've obviously got Sanchez playing a lot of the time. They've got Jorgensen. Seems weird to be switching your keeper. I think it's always a weird one when your one is clearly not better than the other. And you're kind of just trying both of them, and it's like, well, I know one is not going to do anything here to make me think that he's considerably better than the other, so I don't really know why you're doing it. If you're trying to keep them happy, I don't think that's how a goalkeeper situation should be working. I think that just kind of lends itself to the mess that they're in that they don't know what they're doing with their goalkeeper. But Rossini's an interesting one. Obviously spent a lot of time had a good stint in the Championship with a couple of different clubs, with Derby and with Hull, and then was sacked by Hull because they didn't get into the playoffs and they had a bit of an erratic owner. But I think it's still there. The guy who was trying to buy Shells that time was trying to get rid of Damien Duff. Liam Rossini and Damien Duff, very different characters, I would imagine, in the dressing room. But that's a little bit of a tangent. I don't really know where they're going. I wonder is the, when you mentioned there about how they approached the Arsenal game and the criticism that came off the back of that, where they just sat back and said, we'll try and nab a goal late on, and then the counter to that the other night against PSG where they threw everything at it, threw the kitchen sink at it for no apparent reason. I wonder, is there that kind of lack of experience at the top level in there with them? Like,
and if you change your philosophy based on a bit of criticism, then you're in trouble, like, really, aren't you?
But the game, you have to have in-game management, and I've always highlighted that. I think the coaches and the managers have way too much say. Like, one of the my biggest bugbearers at the minute is when a goalkeeper goes down on his arse and he pretends he's hurt and they go and have a team meeting. Why can't they send a midfielder turnaround or a centre-half with a bit of experience, say, lads, this game needs this at the minute, or X, Y and Z, they're pressing us really high. I mean, when Jorgensen plays that ball at the midfield, you could see Enzo Fernandez telling him, the PSG are pressing us, they're pressing us, pressing us. Why are you playing that ball in the midfield? But he's obviously been told by the manager, I want you to play out from the back. And rather than having a brain in his head and thinking, oh, the press is a bit tight at the minute, there's only 5 minutes left, we're 3-2 behind, let's not get this any worse, rather than thinking, let's get ourselves back into it. Just greedy and silly and a little bit naive from Liam Rossini.
I think that's, that's how it's naive.
Yeah.
Very naive.
We'll get to the papers in a sec, but just before we leave this, right, there was an article, and I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know what paper it was in, yesterday, but about the disadvantage, basically, that the Premier League teams are at the moment, in that PSG basically got a game called off last week to prepare for this. Now, PSG are in a genuine title race in France, so it's like they will have to make that game up at some point. But again, whether it's the right or wrong thing to do, the French league are looking after them for their run in Europe. Bayern Munich had their game on Friday night, or moved to Friday night, so they could obviously whoop Atalanta on Wednesday night. Whereas, like, again, there was a sense of, like, the Premier League, that would never happen. And it was like, Chelsea had this amazing tough game at Wrexham. It was like, Chelsea, look, I'm obviously going to give my opinion before I ask you yours, but like, these are the richest clubs in the world. Like, Chelsea have, we criticised Fulham, who were playing for nothing, for putting out a second team. Chelsea should put out a second team against Wrexham and expect to win. It's not giving up in the FA Cup. It's playing the cards that you have as best as you can. This idea that they went to Wrexham with this, like, this insanely tough assignment to play against a lower league team in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
I just feel like people are bending over backwards to make excuses for these English teams who have basically two full squads to pick from of similar quality. What you could say is the reason there's six teams in the last 16 of the competition is that they're in, like, ergo, they're in the most competitive league, and that's going to haunt them. But that's not, like, that's not something you could sort out. That's not something that's just like, oh, they're at, you know, if you're going to be in the most, it used to happen to Italian clubs back in the day all the time. They used to falter late in the, Juventus got to how many kind of like semi-finals, finals when they were the best team in the world and only won one Champions League, because it's difficult, because you have to fight on two fronts. It's just the way it is. I don't get the kind of boo-hoo part of it, to be honest.
I think it's a negative and a positive, really. You look at how strong the Premier League teams are in the Champions League in particular, but I do think the hustle and bustle and the wear and tear of the Premier League, and generally, like, if you look at, you know, even Wolves these days, if Wolves were to go and turn over a Liverpool or an Arsenal, it's not a massive surprise. Even though Wolves have been fairly poor, or, you know, for the majority of the season, they look like you can do something. Even Burnley, you're thinking, they're not great, but if they were to turn over one of the big boys, you wouldn't be massively surprised about it. But in the likes of the French league or even the Spanish league, I would say that it's a bigger surprise. It's a blessing, the fact that it's ultra, ultra competitive, the Premier League, but the hustle and bustle and the wear and tear, if it does come back and get them later on in the European tournaments. But I do think that a lot of the European teams, not the British teams now, struggle with the physicality and the fitness of the Premier League teams. But I'm like you, Mick. I think if Chelsea have that squad, Arsenal have a brilliant squad depth as well, as do Manchester City. Liverpool's is a little bit all over the place at the minute. But if you're going to have big squads, you've got to let the players play. But I think Liam Rossini, you know, a couple of the other bigger managers are having a look at the players, and if you're not having a lot of minutes, I don't think you get a lot of trust. And even Wrexham away is a game you're looking at and thinking, if you don't play your best players, you're getting thrown out. It's disrespectful to the cup, and you're not approaching it in the right manner. But yeah, if you're going to play your best players every single game, I don't think you can have too much of a, you know, too much to give out about when players get tired.
Yeah.
The only thing is that when you, like, the like of a Wrexham, obviously they're a lower league team, but the discrepancy between a lower league team playing against the Real Madrid in the cup over in Spain, there's a big difference there in the quality. Like, a Wrexham playing a second division team in Spain, like, there's a lot less Real Madrid could put out their academy team probably and get a result against them. Chelsea
Absolutely,
could put out
yeah.
their academy team and get a result against Wrexham, you wouldn't say.
But I suppose it all evens out, so they're all at a disadvantage of lack of competitiveness and different, you know, and definitely don't have the same, like, other than Bayern, Real Madrid, PSG, maybe Barcelona to an extent, they don't have the same financial clout. And, you know, I think it all evens out. And aren't we better off the Champions League remaining a... like European wide.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though people might not like PSG and so on, or like Bayern Munich's.
You'd much rather
win the Champions
one of them
League.
In the final than two English teams. You know,
I just think it makes it a lot more interesting.
Yeah, it does.
You
know?
I know only three teams that can win it other than English teams. I mean, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, and PSG.
Yeah.
Other than that.
And not this season, but you would probably think Barcelona at some point will.
I think that high line is going to come back and get them this season with the
pace.
Got
them last year as well.
But I mean, even wider. Like, you could have think about this in 5 years' time, outside of the four of them who are going to, you know, unless someone has unless Bodo Glimt continued to go from strength to strength.
You can't see Juve coming back to the strength that they used to have.
It's hard to see an Italian team at the moment, like, isn't it?
And it seems mad saying that because Inter got all the way to the final last year, but
that is true, in fairness.
They were very good.
Twice in the last 3 years.
Yeah, they have. But I think there's an outlier there in that. They had an exceptionally good manager with a lot of players who were very old, and there's no longevity to what they're doing there, really.
Okay.
Italian football needs to kick up the arse.
We'll dig into some of the papers. Lots of rugby, obviously, and we will talk a good bit about it, but the Examiner here has the win over Scots would crown campaign of growth for Andy Farrell, and there's lots more of that in the papers, but just want to talk about this story here. Ewan Murray, Celtic target, Ireland star, Keane to succeed O'Neill. Robbie Keane is the front runner to become the next Celtic manager, with the club making background plans to heavily restructure football operations at the end of this season. I suppose he's been linked for a while, Robbie, with Celtic. Spurs could come and scupper this. I think, like, I'm sure there's a heart for both teams, and we always make that joke about Robbie, but I would say that genuinely there would be a pull of both of those clubs at the heartstrings. But, like, he'll never, you know, not that he'll never, he'll have to work through the levels to get a Spurs job at any other time in Spurs' history. Whereas right now, or, like, say, maybe in a couple of months, will be the one time where they might go for someone at Robbie's current level, I suppose, you know. So that opportunity is there. But Celtic, obviously... dream job in lots of ways, shop window, etc. What do you think?
I think Robbie would be a voice to either stay where he is now or hang on. I think there would be a bigger job coming down the road, and that's not me saying that Celtic is not a big job. It's a massive job, huge fan base, we'll play in Europe. But I just think there's very little wiggle room for success at Celtic. And I know Hearts are top of the league at the minute and could easily go on to win it. But I think if you win the league and you win the cup at Celtic, the fans are still going to be saying, well, we need success in Europe. And I don't know what success for Celtic is in Europe. Is it group stage football? Is it knockout? Is it, you know, getting to the last bit of the Champions League? I'm not too sure. But I think Robbie, if he did go in there, would be judged on what he does in Europe rather than what he does in the league. And to be fair, I think that Celtic job will always be there for Robbie. I think in 5 years' time, in 6 years' time, his name is going to be thrown around as, could we get him in as the next Celtic boss? So I don't see Robbie as having to take it, and I don't think he's ever been as likely as he is now to be thrown around as the next Spurs manager. So I think the Spurs job, even if they go down into the Championship, is probably a bigger job than Celtic still. And I know Celtic fans won't want to hear that, but the potential of what Spurs can do and the finances, the stadium, the English Premier League is a bigger overall pull than it is the Scottish Premier League. So, yeah.
If the Spurs job isn't there, though, and say Robbie's next option next season, having, say, he wins the league and goes a bit further, they obviously won last night in Europe, and that's his shop window, and you're kind of thinking it's like promotion challenging Championship team, which is a bit, you know, you get that puts you there kind of for future. But doesn't Celtic also put you in a similar shop window? It's like, even though it might not be a higher level than Ferencvaros, if ultimately his future lies in English football management or British football management, then Celtic is very visible. Ange Postecoglou gets the Spurs job, a very different Spurs job than... a lot of that's down to him, by the way. A very different Spurs job than is on offer now. on the back of doing well at Celtic, there's always that chance he can turn it around at Celtic, especially if they don't win the league this year. Mm. That first year when they win it back is the 1 year you almost will be judged on the Scottish Premiership. And then after that, it becomes what have you done for me lately?
Yeah, and I get what you're saying. If you go and have success with Celtic, it's a very short route down into England to the Premier League, and you're more under the spotlight. But I honestly don't think Robbie would be thinking about that too much, and I don't think he has to jump. I think he should stay where he is. He's clearly happy with what he's doing at Ferenc Gvaros. He's getting results and played really well last night. O'Dowda as well started through Irish Eyes is a brilliant one for us. So I don't see any rush with Robbie, and I don't see the need. Oh, you need to move, or you need to get to Celtic, or if the sports job is not there, you need to look at something else. Stay where you are. It's absolutely no problem. And I would echo that way. I know people keep asking about Troy Parrott. If you're happy where you are, stay where you are.
Things can't be going much better for Troy at the moment.
I know it's a million miles away, but when I was at Preston, I was really, really happy at the club. The fans, they weren't the most demanding. As a winger, I could lose the ball a handful of times. Nobody would really get on me back because they thought it'll pay off in a few minutes. He'll go past somebody and he'll get us a goal and an assist. So when I went to Burnley, it was totally different. The fans didn't like me because I'd already been at Blackburn and I'd been at Preston. If sometimes you think I'm really happy going into this club, it'll be the same everywhere. It's not like that. It's really not. And if Troy, as he said, is happy at AZ Alkmaar and Robbie is happy at Ferenc Gvaros, don't be so eager to jump because the grass is not always greener on the other side.
You ever feel, would players now, like, it's like a certain pressure almost of, say, bringing it back to Troy, but even to Robbie, it's like things are going really well here. This is great. This can be an end to itself, but we're almost conditioned to sort of think of like, oh, if I don't get the most out of myself, I'm not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I need to go back. Yeah. I didn't make it at Spurs. I need to kind of get back to that level because I am good enough and what I'm doing now is showing that. So even though he's probably happy out where he is, yeah, it's that sort of forced ambition, though. It's like that's kind of like that's how you're. That's what you're expected to do. So you almost have to.
But that's the problem. You feel there's pressure from the outside, and even your agent. When your agent rings you and tells you such and such is interested in signing you, you get the impression from your agent that they're up for it, and the conversation has gone a little bit further than they're already letting on. But being happy, getting out of your bed in the morning I've got out of bed in mornings and I've been going to clubs and thinking, my God, I do not want to be going into this place. And you never want to be in that place as a professional footballer. So if you're going to work with a smile on your face, don't be so naive to think that it'll be the exact same at another club, because it very rarely is.
Yeah. We've got Troy here on the back of the Sun. Bashing checks, Troy's too much for Prague to contain. And also, just an interesting one here, actually. The United are in a four-way ton race, so they're looking for Tonali in the summer, which I think would be a really good signing for United, and it's probably exactly what they need this summer. But on Parrott, two more goals last night against a team from Prague, not in Prague. But at the same time, if he scores two against the Czechs in 2 weeks yesterday, lads, just so you know. Amazing. Friday, 2 weeks, we'll be here celebrating, no doubt, the qualification for another playoff.
Careful now.
But, like, it's kind of going to the game. It's like, you're kind of getting to the point now, Keith, where you're expecting it from Troy. You know, like, they've got a big European match the first thing. Like, an awful lot of people watching that game last night. It was on one of the main BT channel or TNT channels. I was watching Villa for my own sins, but everyone that doesn't have that kind of rooting interest was going and watching AZ Alkmaar.
It's amazing.
It's bizarre, really, isn't it? Yeah. And it's because we've got this superstar, and then he keeps delivering. Like, he gets, you know, the two goals to win the game.
That's great. It's brilliant. And I've said it before, I'm so proud of Troy. And, you know, I remember when Jose Mourinho brought him on at Spurs, and he wasn't quite ready. He was a kid at the time, and, you know, the fans were asking for him, singing his name, and Mourinho brought him on, and after the game he looks down the barrel of the camera and says, I told you he wasn't ready. That was a horrible thing for a manager to do to a player. So the fact that Troy has bounced back, and look, at people keep saying, should he jump, should he do this, should he do that? Troy has had a taste of an elite club in Spurs. I know they've fallen off a cliff at the minute, but while Troy was there, they were an elite club. Yeah, they were at the right end of the table. So when people are coming and say, oh, this move, that move, Troy has had a taste of it. He doesn't need to think, oh, well, I need to jump, I have to go to an elite club. He can take his time and keep doing what he's doing. But Yeah, the fact that when A's at Alkmaar play, we're all jumping on the live score, thinking, has Troy scored? Is he doing this? Is he doing that? And the fact that all the Sparta Prague fans would have been looking at that, thinking, who's that fella that scored them goals?
Great.
Oh, God, it's
too.
The Irish centre forward we're playing in great 2 weeks.
Finishes.
So he'll have that fear factor as well walking in, which is absolutely brilliant. But I feel like we're on the real cusp of having if he's not already, a real superstar in the Irish team. And I know superstar, you know, outside of Ireland and outside of AZ Alkmaar, maybe Troy is not too well known, but I feel he's right on the cusp of taking that step to being a worldwide superstar.
Yeah, he looks like the way he plays with them as well, and the way they talk about him as well. Like he's really taking a real leadership role
in
that team. Like they
the
kind of build around him as well, which is like again, I can't remember the last time we had an Irish player that a team would build around.
Yeah,
you know?
No, you're 100% right, and you see him going over to the fans after games, and like they're chanting his name, and he's like kind of taking it all in. Like it's amazing to see. Like obviously we look at it all through like a prism of like the Irish football team and how we want Irish football team to be as good as it can. But I think there's also an element of like we just like to see Irish people doing well too. Like especially in like this outside of Ireland and outside of England too, it's different in a footballing context, and he's certainly flying the flag pretty well. And it's great as well, even like on a morning like this morning, that we can actually talk about it and actually put a bit of light on it, because a lot of the time he's scoring all these goals and you'll kind of glance by it and you'll be like, oh, Troy scored again. And then you can take a step back and you're like, we have a guy here who's scoring week in, week out.
He must have 30 goals this season.
Yeah,
like, you know,
yeah, he's on the verge of that anyway, like, which is amazing. And
I was keeping count at one point.
Yeah, but then he started scoring too many. But no, it's amazing. And they're in a cup final now as well over there in Holland, and they're going well in Europe.
Yeah,
they're not going to win the league, but it's good reading anyway. At least there's some good reading ahead of 2 weeks' time, because the club form and the amount of games and the injuries and all that sort of stuff hasn't been lending our way over the last little while. So at least Troy's still scoring.
Two more football stories. Just want to get to in the papers before. There's obviously a lot of racing, and we're going to talk to JD in a couple of minutes. But here we go on the back of the Star. Ticket to slide. Drop Fears sees fans given extra time to sign up for next season. This is in a few of the papers. Spurs have delayed their season ticket renewal date because they don't know what division they're going to be in. Like, we're having a bit of fun with this over the last few weeks, and I think up until last week, the people who were serious in the argument were kind of saying more like, wake up to the fact that Spurs are in a relegation fight. Mm. And everybody else is just having a laugh. How funny would it be if Spurs got relegated? Whereas I think now in the last week, it's not that they're in a relegation fight, it's that they're in real danger and probably even likely at this stage to get relegated if things don't change.
Yeah, they're standing still. I think we all expected Igor Tudor to get some sort of a jump or bounce out of the team, and he hasn't got it whatsoever. And in fact, he's probably got the opposite reaction out of the players. And I do worry about Spurs, and I know fans don't want to hear this, but I've been involved in relegation battles, and your agent rings you and he says, look, you can play with the freedom to know that if you do go down, there'll be loads of club wanting you, so don't get too bogged down in that relegation. And I have to imagine that, you know, just off the top of my head, Christian Romero, Mickey van de Ven, Xavi Simmons, Dominic Solanke, Conor Gallagher, Vicario, Udogi, Pedro Porro, Spanish international. The amount of that team must be thinking, well, it doesn't really matter if we get relegated because I'm out of here. And Spurs fans won't want to hear that, but that would be in the back of so many players' minds. And a lot of time in the Premier League in particular, it looks like that. It looks like there's not really a care in the world with them players. And
like, it seemed, now that this is, you know, I'm sure he didn't, but when like Mickey van de Ven put in that chat after getting sent off in the game before, when he put in that challenge on Tuesday night, that, like, I was surprised wasn't a red card. Let's face it, we've been seeing them as reds a lot lately. You're just kind of thinking, like, what's going through your head there? Like, is this a player who just wants out? It, like, again, it likely isn't, but there's no way that, like, this is a team that needs to be built around van de Ven and Romero. Start tightening up a little bit and seeing what you can get and draw your way out of trouble. And it's like, if the two of them are just these complete loose cannons that don't seem to be able to lock it down at all. Pedro Porro is going around like an absolute lunatic at the moment, like going around kicking, you know, advertising boards, you know, throwing tantrums on the bench, the whole thing. So these guys are not showing any leadership whatsoever. There's no, I'm so surprised that there hasn't been anyone sort of taking the reins a little bit as an experienced top professional.
Do you know what I thought was quite telling? When Kinski gets taken off after 20 minutes in that Champions League game, Romero runs over and gives him a hug and one or two others, and you're thinking, I thought that was a slight against, you know, there would have been a word in the ear of Kinski, don't mind that manager, don't mind him, he's wrong. It wouldn't have just been, because I've been on pitches when people get whipped off early and you don't go over and give them a hug. You just think, I'll have a word on him after the game. But that was a show of, yeah, we're not really having this manager either, from in my opinion. But honestly, I have a bit of a different view on this whole Kinski thing. Mm. If a striker goes through and has a nightmare in the first 20 minutes and misses a penalty and falls over when he should have scored, he'd get taken off. And not one person would say, I feel a bit sorry for him.
I think after 17 minutes, he'd be going off. I think
well,
people would think it was
twice
humiliating.
And give away two goals in the last 16 in the Champions League.
It's not that he shouldn't have been. Yeah. It's that he shouldn't have, like, it was a weird selection in the first place. He also defended the selection afterwards, saying it was the right call, which was a bit bizarre. But then also, it's
totally
like,
ignoring him is a strange move.
There is something.
It is a bit strange.
There is something humiliating about taking off a goalkeeper because it's not done. So, you know, the norms do apply. And they are. It is a position built on a kind of a lonely existence of sort of like being on your own in many, many ways. And it's like I kind of figure at that stage, you're thrown in, things weren't going to get any better. Like, and Spurs were already going to lose the game. Like, get him off. It's fine. But I can understand why people are kind of like taken by it, I suppose.
Two horrific mistakes.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrific mistakes. And if it was any other position on the pitch, you'd be thinking he needs to come off. So what you would say...
Would he come off, though? Would you actually take him off if a midfielder slipped and that happened and it resulted in two goals?
I think if he did it twice and he looked as uncomfortable as Kinski did in goal,
if a manager takes a head, it's gone. And it's not like you're not going to do it. I think it's your duty to take
Nobody
off
has sympathy
point.
For the outfield player if they get whipped. And I know 20 minutes is probably a bit extreme.
I'm not sure,
I don't think anybody has any sympathy for it.
I think if a striker comes in and they're picked ahead of a big name and they're playing
their
selection is a talking point and they play so badly that the manager takes them off after 70 minutes, I think we would be talking about it.
Yeah, well, to be fair, Tudor...
Say if he played,
it's his fault, isn't it?
Mason Mealy out of nowhere.
Yeah.
The other night,
whipped him off
instead of Solanke or Colin Moani, right? That, and then next thing, he has a stinker and he takes him off after 17 minutes. Obviously, we'd be talking about him, but I think in the UK as well, I feel like they would, I have to say.
Yeah, but it lies on Tudor because he's looking at him in training 100%. And he's thinking, I'm going to start him. And then after 17 minutes, he thinks, he's not quite at the races.
If you're looking to say, I'm concentrating on the league and Liverpool's more important, it's like they didn't rest anybody else. Like, why does the goalkeeper need a particular rest?
By the way, we'll rest the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But the fella who doesn't do anything.
The person who should be able to play 60 games a season.
I get the mental fatigue, I get all that, but it's 90 minutes of concentration, and then you can go asleep on the plane on the way home. You can have the day off tomorrow. Do what you like. 90 minutes of concentration, and we're not talking physical exertion here.
Yeah.
We're talking just look at the ball, stay tuned in.
Don't fall
over.
Oh
no, he's too tired. We need him for a relegation battle.
Okay,
get up there.
It is time to talk a bit of Cheltenham, but I do realise that we've had someone on the line this entire time that we're absolutely torturing. John Duggan, I'm sorry, we didn't mean it.
Good morning, Mick and Keith and Matthew. And I've got a really good ability to compartmentalise and switch off. So I've been able to do that for the last few minutes, lads. And I've been just thinking about horses and Gold Cup winners and Dawn Run and Arkle and all these things here at Cheltenham.
Well, the only thing I'll say, John, is as a supporter of a team who spent 3 years in the Championship not that long ago, it rekindled my love for the club. I had more fun. They play every day of the week. It's amazing. They're never not playing. And you're on TV the whole time. It's just like it's a lot of fun, I have to say, especially when they do get their act together. Spurs will come straight back up, John, so we don't need to worry too much.
Well, Spurs just needs a complete overhaul. It needs an absolute reset. Sell the players. I don't think the dressing room is good. Sell the club. Start again. And maybe that could be the best thing that happens to Spurs.
I'm going to do you a favour here and let you compartmentalise. It's only fair because of the work you're doing over in Cheltenham. Don't forget, we've got the Racing Pod will be coming out later this morning, 11:30, with all John's tips. But the back of the Independent, John, based on a dire day for me anyway, and I think most punters yesterday.
Everyone.
Willie Mullins threatens Cheltenham boycott over going concerns, basically saying that the going too good at Cheltenham I know he had to pull out, he pulled out one of his main fact-the-file in the Ryanair yesterday. Racing is a very different thing if the best horses don't go from Ireland to Cheltenham. Jumps racing in general, I think, becomes almost a completely different prospect. I think we're probably far away from that. But how big is this a deal that the ground is just not up to scratch? Or is this the biggest trainer throwing his toys out of the pram because it's not exactly as he wants things?
I just find the whole Factophile thing a bit strange, Mick. Look, he won the Irish Gold Cup, and there's only one Cheltenham Gold Cup back to 1924. And I was very surprised that he was chosen to run in the Ryanair Chase, which is one of the big races with the Stairs Hurdle on Thursday, and it's grade one, and he won it last year. But there's only one Gold Cup, and he might not stay. And actually, the ground now today would be perfect for Factophile because there's been 10 millimetres of rain overnight, and the going is on the chase course, good to soft, softer places, and soft, good to softer places on the hurdles course. And it's a beautiful day here at Cheltenham, and it will dry out. But I spoke to Darragh O'Keefe, the Donegal Rail jockey who rode Hartwood to win the Ryanair Chase yesterday after the race, and he said the going was on the easy side of good. To me, that's fine. I mean, Cheltenham has been run on good to firm ground in the past, like fast ground, and the ground was a bit lively, and it's their right to take their horse out of the race. But I don't know. Sometimes trainers give interviews in the heat of the moment or when they're in the middle of their work at racing. So William Mullins loves Cheltenham, and I can see William Mullins coming back here for many years because he's the most successful trainer. Look, ultimately, there's only one Cheltenham, and whatever's said on one day, you know, you might have a different view in the future. So I was surprised Factophile didn't go for the Gold Cup, and I think it's a missed opportunity for everybody.
Yeah. Before we get on to today, like, again, it was a bit of a disaster yesterday, I would say. It was a tough watch many times when you had a few kind of little tips and nods here and there, and none of them really came true. But we did also have a kind of a rather bizarre staged burying of the hatchet, I suppose, between Nico de Voinville and Declan Queeley. Do you reckon, like, as awkward and all as that was, it was probably a good thing that, you know, it's not going to hang over things as much now that they've just decided to put it to bed?
Yeah, I think it is a good thing. I do feel that this, Ron Burgundy said, it escalated quickly. it went from spicy to very serious. Once Declan Queeley did that interview with the Racing Post on Wednesday evening, when the allegation of racial abuse was levelled at Nico de Boinville, which Nico de Boinville categorically denied at the BBC the next day, you're thinking, okay, this is now getting to a different space where it's back page of the UK Times, front page story on the industry newspaper, the Racing Post. And I don't know this for any facts, but my feeling is that this is an establishment sport, not only in Ireland, but in the UK as well. And I would say words were had, guys. Whatever went on, we don't know exactly what went on. Just get it sorted, please. And put a bit of proportionality onto it. Now, what Declan Queeley, as I said, alleged was very, very serious. And like, it's not the end of the matter, because the BHA, the British Horse Racing Authority, will continue to investigate this incident. And the general starts here at Cheltenham, which have been an absolute mess. And I can't believe for the biggest week of the year that they've been such a mess. But look, I think the temperature was brought down. It was good to see the handshake. And Davy Russell was apparently the peacemaker between the two of them. So, look, I just generally feel that controversies do happen in all sports. Sometimes it's verbals in sports, and Keith would know that it's part of life in sport when you're dealing with people on edge or when the blood is up. But when you get into a different kind of territory, then you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, this is getting quite serious. So, but racing as a sport, my view would be that it tends to keep its business in house if there are controversies, and this is reflective, lads, of the new world where everything is recorded, everything is on camera, 24/7. Everything you say is for the record. So I think racing, I suppose, maybe had its eyes opened to the world it's living in now.
JD, am I right in saying all the jockeys get dressed in the same changing room?
Yeah. So the lads who were involved in that race would have had to go back and share the same dressing room. So say if you're playing for Burnley against Blackburn, Keith, and you're imagining you're going into the same dressing room after the race, after trying to kill each other on the pitch. So that is the bizarre thing. And the jockeys have it tough because there's a lot of them in National Hunt are starving themselves, and they're keeping their weight down. So they're going to be naturally grumpy anyway. It's Cheltenham. It's a tight track. the fields are very big. It's competitive. You know, all the dreams everybody's been carrying for months to come here, owners, trainers, jockeys, and the animals are much bigger than you see on television when they're right beside you. So like you're dealing with an animal that has a temperament, half a ton, that's going at 30 miles an hour. There's going to be sharp elbows involved here. And then they all go back and they're able to maybe switch off and be friends again and sit beside each other. So it is a strange sport in that regard. But I think, look, ultimately, if common sense is the right way of saying prevailed, I don't know if people agree, but it seems like the temperature's been brought down, and that is a good thing.
Yeah. You know, Ger said something interesting yesterday morning. He said, when we were talking about the Nick of the Boinville thing, and look, Nicola de Boinville has denied it, and I think we have to take his word for that.
Yeah.
But he said it's never far from the surface. And one thing I would back up on that is that when you looked at when ITV put up their put up the interviews and stuff like that on Wednesday, the comments are undeniable that were there from both sides, to be honest, but from an awful lot of English people, like typical Irish, this, that, and the other. You lived in, like, you know, in England for quite a while. Was there ever that sense of like it? You know, it's not far off before you're an Irish so and so. Like that the Irish part of who you are is a natural insult.
Yeah, every I would say I played over 200 professional games, and I would say 90% of them I was called an Irish so and so in most games. And it never really bothered me because I was very quick to have my own little rebuttal on what people were saying to me. So it never went over the top. It never went into anything too serious. But
are Welsh lads getting that, or like, you know, is that just something the other is always the other, or is there a kind of a inbuilt kind of Irishy thing that's there over, you know, hundreds of years?
I don't know. See, look, at Blackburn in the academy, we used to do things like, right, the Irish lads against the rest of the world, or, you know, such and such. And you just naturally be pitted against each other. And even on a Friday, if you're doing a five-a-side, it'd be like, right, the Irish lads against the British lads against the rest of the world. And it's no big deal to me. But, yeah, when people say you're Irish so-and-so, I just say, yeah, well, you're an English so-and-so. And it would never really bother me too much, to be honest with you.
Yeah, fair enough. John, it's been, what kind of a week has it been? Because obviously this is all overshadowed, and it's funny when you hear some of the news reports, like they're trying to get to the racing, but we get tied down in this argument, and some controversy does take over a lot of the time. But in terms of a week's racing, and obviously we've a pretty big day to go yet, it's not over yet, have you enjoyed it? Has it been high quality? Are there races and horses that we'll remember and be talking about for a long time?
I think it's been above average is what I would say. I give it 7/8 out of 10, Mick. And I think one of the really beneficial things this year has been that the fields have been bigger. I think it's more competitive and it's harder as a punter to find winners. But I still think the UK challenge is getting stronger. It's not as heated as the Ryder Cup, but going into the final day, it's Ireland 11, the UK 10. And think about it. If the British horses are coming to Punchestown every year and winning 3/4 of the races, we find it strange. And that's what's been happening here for the last 10 years, 9 years out of 10. And there's one draw. We've been very, very dominant as Irish race goers at Cheltenham with the trainers and the jockeys and the winners that we had. There is still a very much a case of the 11 Irish winners. Willie Mullins has trained 5 of them, and the other 6 have been individual wins. So some really good stories. Cotton Keane, a flat jockey riding the bumper winner, home by the Lee yesterday at 11 years of age, at his 5th attempt winning the Stairs Hurdle. Connor Stone Walsh riding his first festival winner on Final Orders. But there is a degree of routine about the incredible achievements of Willie Mullins, Paul Tan, and the stable in Carlow. Because of Lossie Matt's win at the Champion Hurdle and Nicolette Jaton's win at the Champion Chase. Look, I think that Cheltenham is about two things. This is 40 years since Don Run won the Gold Cup, which was one of the biggest stories in Irish sporting history. A mare winning the Champion Hurdle and the Gold Cup, and when Ireland didn't have anything going for it economically, that we did something to cheer about in a sporting sense. So that has been obviously changed over the last 40 years. Things are much different now, and we're much more successful in so many different ways. But what you're looking for is the stories, and that is the most important thing for me out of Cheltenham, is that something that can resonate emotionally with you, as Don Run did, and maybe the Harry Redknapp could today in the Gold Cup. If he wins the Gold Cup with the Jukebox Man, or Jimmy Mangan and Cork, he's only got 10 horses. he's headed as Spadanis Terror. So what you want is the stories. Has the racing been good? Yes, it has been competitive at above average Gold Cup. People gone on about the crowd sizes here, or it's down, or it's this. To be honest, do you want to be one of 71,000 people here, hardly able to move, and uncomfortably busy? It's capped at 66,000 for the Gold Cup today. That's most that you get, more than you get in most football stadiums. I think they've done a good job here. It's been pleasant all week. They're relaxed. Like, for example, you could buy Prosecco now as opposed to having spent 30 quid on champagne. So who was here yesterday? Danny Dyer was here. Alex Ferguson was here. I remember when I see armed police, I'm going to go on, lads, oh, what's going on here? There's armed police around here with machine guns. And I just felt somebody on Wednesday just... I just felt a sense around me. Okay, I better move here. I'm near the winner's enclosure. I didn't even see anybody just move, and then Queen Camilla just walked by. You know, so that is the
Danny Dyer and the Queen, the great and the good.
That's the nature of Cheltenham. That it is for 1 week, not only in Ireland but in England. It is the front page news as well as the back page news.
Is there any football teams over there, JD?
Peter Crouch is here, but obviously he's retired. I think I saw Jordan Pickford here.
Yeah, I saw a picture of Pickford during the week. He was definitely there one of the days, yeah. Luke Littler was there. Luke Humphreys was
Luke
there.
Luke Littler, yeah. I haven't seen any teams, Keith and Matthew, but I think it's good that you don't know the footballers are here, because, you know, I remember a few years ago, some of the footballers from one club were misbehaving, and it was all over the Daily Mail. And to be honest, you want good stories as opposed to salacious stories.
Yeah, you're right. Keep the riffraff out, JD. That's what I said. I remember in dressing rooms the week leading up to Cheltenham, like, players used to come in and say, lads, we're going to organise a helicopter to take us after training. Who fancies the whip round? You're like,
whip round for a helicopter.
That's not for me.
No, but it would take over, wouldn't it? A little bit, as in people do get... I'd imagine there's when things like this are happening, it's very little football that's talked about in a football dressing room. There's other obsessions come to the fore, don't they?
Yeah, a lot of players have, like, shares and racehorses as well. We know Harry Redknapp obviously loves it, and Alex Ferguson. Forgive me if this is a silly question, JD, but do the Irish jockeys ride on British horses, or do they just ride Irish horses, given that it's Ireland against England or Britain?
Oh, they ride British horses, and the Irish-English thing, I think, is, look, they've made something out of it, but, like, there's a lot. Like, for example, Nicol de Moineville had the handshake yesterday in the quarters of Jamie McManus at the Weyroom from Limerick. So there's very much a crossover. Harry Cobden, for example, is a really good English rider who's going to be the retained jockey for JP next season. And he is probably the best English rider out there. And he rode Kids Boohoo, for example, for Willie Mullins the other day. So there's a massive crossover between Ireland and England. It's just a bit of PR, really, this Irish-English Presbury Cup thing. And it's very much a fluid situation.
It's Willie versus the rest, really, isn't it? As opposed to Ireland versus England. Let's talk about, like, I won't step on the racing pod. Obviously, it'll be out about 11:30 or so this morning. People can get all your tips for the day. But the Gold Cup, obviously, it just seems like it's a Gold Cup that has you mentioned it there a minute ago, the jukebox man is Harry Redknapp's horse, but it feels like no matter who wins it, it feels like there's a story waiting to be told. You know, if I know the way you're thinking, would be a big surprise to go and retain, but that would be an unbelievable story as well. All the way down the field, it's wide open, it seems to me.
It is wide open. Like Gaelic Warrior, they won the champion hurdle, Rich Ritchie colours, the kind of pink colours, with William Mullins and Paul Tennant on Tuesday. I don't think since the 30s has happened where you've had the exact same connections to win a Gold Cup and a champion hurdle in the same year. Okay. Rebecca Curtis is a small trainer on the Pembrokeshire coast of Wales. So she has Haiti Couleur, who won the Irish Grand National last season, is running. Envo Allen is retiring at 12 years of age after this for Henry de Bromhead, the big winner yesterday. That's a story. Spadanis Terror, as I've detailed, is a story. Django Bay for Nicky Henderson, who's had a really good week here, has had a couple of three winners already. There's plenty of stories. I'm just getting the race card. I'm just going to hold it up here, the Gold Cup race card. So page 58 is where the Gold Cup is, and there's, what, 11 runners in the race. Disappointing that Galopin des Champs is not in it. Plenty of options. They're just making sure that we, like, I remember there was one year I went through these and I actually forgot one. So Envo Allen, Firefox for Gordon Elliott, Jack Kennedy will ride that, Gold Tweet, a French horse, Grey Dawning for Dan Skelton, who's had a good week, Lampress is an outsider for Venetia Williams. Yeah, that's the 11. I mean, it would be just amazing to see Harry win. I mean, I know he's won, I am a celebrity, and I know he's won an FA Cup, but to win a Gold Cup, 35 years of
has anyone horses. Ever done that trifecta? Yeah.
A real treble. That's a proper treble.
Gold Cup, celebrity, and FA Cup. What?
That's a proper treble.
Alex Ferguson doesn't proper have that.
Yeah. I think I probably I'm kind of settling down on Gaelic Warrior, lads. I'm coming down to Gaelic Warrior. Patrick Mullins has been with us for an extended interview last November, and I said, give us some horses for the season. He said, I'd love to ride Gaelic Warrior in the Gold Cup. Unfortunately for Patrick Gallopin, the chance was ruled out. And Paul Tennant, if he can settle Gaelic Warrior, I mean, the horse has won the Arkle here over 2 miles. He won the Bowl at Aintree over 3 miles in a furlong. He's won over 3 miles at Punchestown. And I think he'll stay. I think the ground is fine. I think he jumps well. His temperament can be a little bit quirky, but if he relaxes, he is the class to win this. But as we've said here, it is wide open. That's 4 o'clock post time for 3.25 miles and 22 fences. Bring it on.
Okay, JD, we can't wait. You will review everything with Owen later on tonight. And Racing Pod coming up yourself. Johnny, anybody else on?
Yeah, Don McLean, live stream from 10. And as you say, McHalf, 11. And if you want to sign up for tips, folks, for free. And also lots of things to come in 2026, an exciting year. We're going to have hopefully some race days with the Racing Pod Club, offtheball.com/RacingPodClub to sign up for the charity bets. They were disastrous. They were shocking yesterday. And hopefully they'll be a bit better today. Gamble responsibly.
No doubt about it. There's been some great sign up for the Racing Pod Club. So looking forward to that. JD, thanks a million. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Cheers, guys. Take care.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at ViagraConnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.